Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Okay, I'm continuing now with the explanation of the Satipatthana Sutta. This is Sutta number 10 in the Majjhima Nikaya. And last time I started the explanation of the meditation on the, we're in the section on contemplation of the body. This is Kayanupassana. And last time I started the explanation of the section on the meditation on the parts of the body, the bodily parts, what is commonly called the Asubha meditation. This is the meditation on the unattractive nature of the body. And the specific purpose of this meditation is to reduce and to eliminate, at least to eliminate at the level of suppression, sensual desire, sensual lust. And before I go further, I want to just speak a few words about the purpose of eliminating sensual lust in the Buddha's teaching. Because for people in the world, sensual desire, sensual lust is the source of the greatest happiness. Or at least a source of very intense happiness, very intense pleasure. But the Buddha's teaching is directed, first of all, towards higher types of pleasure, more intense, more sublime types of happiness than are available through the enjoyment of the five sense objects. Particularly, there is the happiness that comes by withdrawing the mind completely from its entanglement with the world of sense objects and sinking the mind more and more deeply into its own inner depths until it reaches the stages of meditative absorption that are called the jhanas. And in the jhanas, the mind is able to enjoy a purer, more intense, more sublime pleasure and happiness than is available through the indulgence of sensual pleasures or sensual desires. The Buddha speaks of the happiness of the jhanas as arising through vivicheva kamehi vivicha akusalehi dhammehi, through detachment from sensual desires, through detachment from unwholesome states of mind. And in order to be able to bring the mind into the jhanas, one has to overcome the five hindrances. And the first of the five hindrances is kamachanda, which is sensual desire. Sensual desire, of course, takes many forms, but one of the most intense, most powerful forms of sensual desire is sexual desire. That is, desire directed towards the body of another person. And sexual desire thrives and flourishes because we innately have a perception of the body as something beautiful and attractive. And so in order to detach the mind from its involvement in sensual desires, one of the methods in the Buddha's munitions, place where one stores munitions, arsenals. In his arsenal is this method of contemplating the unattractive nature of the body. This is not a meditation which perceives things the way they truly are. This is not a type of insight meditation, but it's what I would call a strategic meditation, which replaces one type of perception, the perception of the body as beautiful, attractive, with another perception, sort of artificially created perception, focusing upon a particular aspect of the body, which is its looking beneath the surface, its unattractive nature, its sometimes even its repulsive nature. And so this helps to reduce the sensual desire and enables the mind to detach itself from sensual desire, eventually to overcome sensual desire temporarily, and then to enter into deeper states of concentration until it can finally enter into the jhanas. But the states of samadhi, even the jhanas, they bring great happiness, great pleasure, peace to the mind. But that is not the purpose of the Buddha's teaching on samadhi, just to bring happiness and peace. But the purpose is to establish a foundation for insight, for wisdom. And so the practice of meditating on the impurity or the unattractive nature of the body brings detachment, brings withdrawal of the mind from its sensual entanglements, so that then in the state of indifference to the lure or the attraction of sensual pleasures, when one becomes detached from that, then one can use this calm, concentrated mind to focus upon the real nature of things and see the way things truly are with insight. And then the ultimate aim of the Buddha's teaching is to bring one to the extinction of suffering, to nibbana. And what keeps one in bondage to the round of birth and death, to samsara, is tanha, craving. And the first of the three types of craving is kama tanha, sensual desire. And so to weaken the grip of sensual desire, again, this meditation on the unattractive nature of the body is a useful temporary antidote. It's not a final antidote. The final antidote is panya or prajna, insight into the true nature of things as being impermanent, unsatisfactory, and not self. The meditation on the unattractive nature of the body is not a wisdom meditation. It does not take one to the nature of things as they truly are. It's just we call it a provisional meditation, which helps to establish a platform from which one can go deeper into penetrating insight. And also it's a meditation which is not universally recommended, but is recommended for people with particular temperaments, particularly for those who are troubled by sensual desire. But in fact, what I have to backtrack on what I just said. Almost all human beings have sensual desire. So to some extent, it's useful for just about everybody. To some extent. But some people have to practice it more than others. Okay, last time I explained how this meditation, it's described in the Satipatthana Sutta. And I said that one, in order to learn the meditation properly, one has to go through, first verbally recite the different parts of the body. And I explained how one does this. First, one has to get familiar with the parts of the body, preferably by direct inspection, if possible, if one doesn't have the fortune to be able to see the actual parts of the body in some way, witnessing an autopsy, going to what? How else does one do it? Getting permission to attend the open surgery. I don't know how else one would do this. See it on television. Well, that's the kind of what I mean is seeing the actual parts of the body and live, live or dead, but seeing it face to face, eye to eye. The second best is to see either on television or computer screen or physiology anatomy textbooks. But one gets familiar with the parts of the body, what they look like, their colors, shapes, where they're located. Then one goes through reciting, first verbally, as I explained, one breaks them up into groups, and one goes through usually five or six at a time, forwards, backwards, forwards again. The next time one goes into the next group, forward into five, then back, forward again, till one expands, till one gets to the end, comes to urine. Then I suggest going in straight order from urine all the way back to head hairs, then coming forward again in groups from head hairs to skin, skin back to head hairs up through flesh up to bone marrow back to flesh, flesh up to bone marrow, then through kidneys to lungs, lungs back to kidneys, kidneys up to lungs, then starting again intestines up to feces, add the brain. That's the method of the commentaries. Brain back to intestines, then from intestines forward, then taking in the liquid parts, starting from bile through fat, from fat back to bile, bile again up to fat, then take tears, grease, spittle, snot, oil of the joints, urine, urine back to tears, tears up to urine, then go backwards through all 32 parts again to head hairs. Keep on doing this over and over and over verbally, just reciting to oneself, not too fast, not too slow. Then as you're going, you're not just reciting, but you're thinking of each part, focusing upon its unattractive or repulsive nature. Okay, then after one has really becomes familiar with them through verbal recitation, then one can drop the verbal recitation and just go through the parts mentally. You could recite the name of the part mentally to oneself, but the main focus now should be on the part itself, bringing into mind its color, shape, some idea of where it's located, and always focusing on the idea that this is my body, this is part of my body. We just take the body as a composite whole, but now we're actually dissecting the body into its constituents and realizing that all of these parts are present within my body. So what we call my body, it's just a compact mass of all of these parts put together, and somebody has sewn up the top. Okay, the advice is to go through, following the correct order, not going too quickly. If you go too quickly, then you're just becomes a mechanical routine, and then you're not really able to focus in finely enough upon the repulsive or unattractive nature of the part. But not too slowly, because if one goes too slowly, then the mind tends to wander off or to get lost in too many details surrounding the part. And because then one starts thinking about the part, one doesn't really just pick up the unattractive nature of that part. And so one goes through at a medium pace. Okay, and then as one is going through, one is constantly focusing upon, you might call, the unattractive nature of that part. Sort of letting the details about the part recede into the background and just seeing it as something which is unattractive, repulsive, but not feeling aversion or loathing towards the body, but just something which will help to reduce, to cool off, you could call it the heat of sensual desire. Okay, as one is going through these 32 parts, after one gains a great deal of familiarity with them, one finds that it's not necessary to use so many parts. One can then start dropping off parts. The Visuddhimagga, that's the path of purification, suggests dropping off parts gradually. But I think that makes the method a bit too complicated. What I suggest is that when one gets familiar with all the 32 parts, one just simply reduces them to 4 parts. Or if one wants, you could bring in 5. Skin, flesh, bones, blood. And if one wants, one can just bring internal organs, just taking them as one lump sum instead of taking the individual organs. So you get all of them, heart, liver, lungs, intestines, all of them just packed together, just letting the unattractive nature of those parts stand out. And then one just goes back and forth with these 4 or 5 components. Skin, flesh, bones, then in brackets, whether one wants to or not, internal organs, blood. And blood, internal organs, bones, flesh, skin. One can keep on doing this back and forth for a long time. And that will help to generate a strong, you call it asubhasanya, perception of the unattractive nature of the body. But this meditation can also be used for absorption, for jhana. And if one is aiming at jhana, then what one does at a certain point when one has reduced the meditation just to a few parts, out of those few parts, one will find one part stands out as particularly distinctive in one's perception. Then one drops all the other parts and one just focuses upon that one part. For many people, for many meditators, it's the bones that become taken as the object of meditation, the skeleton. For some, it might be the heart or the liver or the muscles. So one just takes that one part and one just continually focuses upon that one part. Okay, so this is the meditation on the unattractive nature of the body. Then the text has this formula 11, in paragraph 11. In this way, he abides contemplating the body as a body internally. He abides contemplating the body as a body externally. He abides contemplating the body as a body both internally and externally. Actually, in this meditation, to develop it in the initial stages, more than the initial stages, and almost all the fundamental stages, one focuses upon the body internally, one's own body. But then at a certain point, once one gets a very strong perception of the unattractive nature of one's own body, then one can apply it to the bodies of others. But one shouldn't choose a person who is particularly attractive to oneself to do this. Otherwise, instead of diminishing sensual desire, the mind will put aside that perception of unattractiveness and start focusing upon the attractive characteristics of that person. One just chooses another person who's completely unattractive, just as kind of exercise to see that the same parts present in one's own body are present in that person's body. And then one could run through that person's body, considering that body as a mass, composite mass, consisting of these same 32 parts. Then one could even go through other people, a whole mass of other people, numbers of other people. And then one could even expand the perception until one takes in sort of collectively all humanity as consisting of, as just being units comprised of these 32 parts. That's contemplating the body as a body externally. And then one goes back and forth quickly between one's own body, one's own and other bodies, or takes them both together as composed of the 32 parts. And then to develop insight at a certain point, one could, at this point, one is really leaving behind the perception of unattractiveness and turning to the contemplation of the arising and passing away of the body. This is contemplating the nature of arising, the contemplation of vanishing. That's moving into the perception of impermanence. Or else then when establishes simply the perception, the idea that there is the mindfulness, that there is a body to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and mindfulness. Here one is even leaving aside the perception of unattractiveness and just setting up the perception of a body. Okay, before I go further, I'll ask if there's any questions on the contemplation of foulness or unattractiveness. Any questions?
You have personally found this to be helpful?
Yes, very much so. You. Okay.
You mentioned that this meditation can be used for jhana.
Yeah.
That you would focus on one part.
Strong
impression. I recall when we were doing our jhana discussion that we would, this, for instance, with a casino object, that you would look at it, and then you get an image in your mind of it, and then there would be that moment when we weren't really grasping, and then sort of the image wasn't there anymore, but it was still there. Is that sort of something similar that would happen here? I mean, could we just replace the bones with Kasina in that earlier discussion with John?
Yeah. Except that with the Kasina, the way you stated it was, I think, somewhat a little different from the way I explained. With the Kasina, one works with the object constantly in front of oneself, so that one has the Kasina, a disc, for example, say a colored disc or a disc of clay representing the earth, Kasina, and then one is looking at it for a certain time, then closing the eyes and visualizing it, then opening the eyes again a little bit to look at it, then visualizing, opening the eyes, then closing and visualizing, until one reaches a point where one could visualize the disc with one's eyes closed and see it just as vividly as one would be able to see it with the eyes open. At that point, one doesn't need the physical object anymore. And then one can leave behind the physical disc, the actual disc, and just go on focusing upon this visually, this visual image of the disc. With the parts of the body, one generally, well, I shouldn't say that. I was going to say that one generally doesn't have the advantage of having them continually in front of one. The reason I hesitated and said that I shouldn't say that, in many monasteries in Sri Lanka, they have a special room where they keep a skeleton. They get them from the mortuaries. Usually it's a beggar whose body dies, and then nobody claims the body. Then after some time, I don't know how it works, but they get skeletons and then they give them to the monastery. And so they will keep the skeleton there, and then if monks want to do this meditation on the bones, they will just go into that room and they'll be able to sit there and get the visual image of the skeleton. And then continue that way, they can continually refresh their visual memory of the skeleton. Other parts of the body, especially other internal parts of the body, it's not so easy to continually refresh one's memory of what they look like, except by pictures of them.
Could you please explain the simile back in the two ends?
I have to say, I'm not quite sure what that might be. It must have been something used in the Indian agriculture of that period. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if that's the intention. One can make that comparison. I don't know if that's the intention. Well, maybe that's a good way to look at it, yeah. I thought you wanted me to explain what that bag, what exactly that bag was. It must have been something used in that period for some purpose. I don't know what. There's a commentary. That doesn't explain that bag. It seems that even the commentators must have been familiar with it, and everybody at that time must have been familiar with it, and so they just take it for granted that by mentioning that type of bag, one knows what it is. Okay, shall I go on to the next section? This is section 12, the section on the four elements. Okay, first I read the text. Okay, again, bhikkhus. A bhikkhu reviews the same body, however it is placed, however disposed, as consisting of elements thus. In this body, there are the earth element, the water element, the fire element, and the air element. Then a simile. Just as though a skilled butcher or his apprentice had killed a cow and was seated at the crossroads with it cut up into pieces, so too a bhikkhu reviews the same body, and so on, as consisting of elements thus. In this body there are the earth element, the water element, the fire element, and the air element. Okay, so this is a meditation on the four great elements. Okay, there are at least two different ways in which this meditation can be undertaken. One is mentioned in the suttas. One is a very concise way, which is the way explained here. One simply considers, contemplates the body as consisting of these four elements. The other is a more detailed way, which we find explained in, for example, in Sutta number 28, or number, let us say, number 62. I think it's 62. The Greater Discourse to Rahula. Right. Maharahulovada Sutta. Yet, if you turn to page 528, here we take different parts of the body and sometimes different functions of the body, and we classify them according to the four primary elements. Here, when we go through the parts, most of these parts will be the same as we come across in the meditation on the unattractive nature of the body. But here the purpose is different. Here the purpose is not to generate a perception of unattractiveness, but it's rather to be able to understand how what we call the body is constituted out of these four primary elements. And now what we call elements, and we use these traditional names, names from Indian physics of the period, are actually four characteristics, so we might call them behavioral properties of matter. And so it's explained in the commentaries that each of these elements really signifies a particular characteristic. So the earth element Okay, so these are what the elements represent. The earth element has the characteristic, the primary characteristic is that of hardness or stiffness. But when there's deficiency of the earth element, then it manifests as softness. So we can detect a kind of continuum or spectrum according to the intensity of the earth element between hardness and softness. The what's called the water element is actually the property that is responsible for the cohesion of material phenomena. We could say that the water element might be an ancient designation for that particular property, that force which binds the mass of the mass element of matter together and holds mass together so that mass doesn't just dissipate into infinite space. We might say, perhaps we could say that the earth element is what represents mass, and the water or liquid element represents the cohesive force which binds, the force that binds masses of matter together. But experientially, the liquid element manifests as a flowing quality within experience. And that is the way we detect it. So when there's a preponderance of the liquid element, we experience a flowing quality. When there's a deficiency, then we experience the dryness. Okay, the heat element or fire element, its primary characteristic, of course, is heat. And when there's a deficiency of the fire element, then that deficiency manifests as coolness or cold. And so when we're looking for the fire element within experience, we look for heat within the body. And when there's a deficiency of the fire element, then we experience coldness in the body. And then the air element is manifest as, I call it, distension, that is, expansion, and as motion, as movement. And movement takes two main forms. One is expansion, that indicates the presence, the active presence of the air element. And then when there's a deficiency of the air element, then the motion takes the moves in the opposite direction, compression. That is pressure coming from the outside towards the inside. Okay, so when we go through the body in detail, investigating the elements in detail, then we use the method indicated in the Maharahulavada Sutta. That's on page 528. Whatever internally belonging to oneself is solid, solidified, and clung to, that is, all of these parts, 20 parts, from the head hairs to, well, it goes to feces, but later texts include the brains. So going from head hairs to brains, all those 20 parts symbolically represent the earth element. Because actually, and according to the Buddha's teaching, any unit of matter contains all four elements. The four elements are inseparable. So even, say, in what is hard, and the most hard and solid part of the body, what represents the earth element par excellence, the bones, let us say. In bone matter, there is also liquid. The bone matter has heat, that's the fire element. And though the bone appears, even though it appears to be still, motionless, but if one looks through it with a powerful microscope, one will see the molecules are in constant motion. There are constant tensions within the bone as different movements of molecules from one section to another take place. That is the activity of the air element. But just taking it by represent what is most prominent, these 20 parts signify the earth element. Then the next section, we have 12 parts representing the water element. That is whatever is internal, belonging to oneself, whatever is water, watery, and clung to. That is the 12 parts from bile through urine. Or whatever else internally belonging to oneself is water, watery, and clung to, that is called the internal water element. Then the fire element, paragraph 10, the internal fire element, whatever internally belonging to oneself is fire, fiery, and clung to. That is that by which one is warmed. This is the internal bodily heat, by which one ages. This is because in the Indian conception it is the bodily heat that causes one to grow old. Just as if we take a fruit, say an apple, we put it in the refrigerator where it's cold, it'll stay fresh for a long time. If we leave it out in the open where it's exposed to heat, it quickly oxidizes, so it will decay more quickly. So heat causes things to decay more quickly. And by which it is consumed, and that by which what is eaten, drunk, consumed, and tasted gets completely digested. That is, it's the bodily heat that is responsible for digestion, for the oxidation of the food, and it's for the metabolism. This or whatever else internally belonging to oneself is fiery and clung to. This is called the internal fire element. Then the air element in paragraph 11, whatever internally belonging to oneself is air, airy and clung to, that is, upgoing winds, winds that go up through the body, downgoing winds, winds that go down through the body. And here in the Indian conception of physiology, what we would perhaps call nerve impulses, transmission of like nerve impulses from the upper part of the body to the lower part, sensory transmissions from the outer sense organs into the brain. These are considered to be transmitted by wind currents or air currents. So upgoing winds, downgoing winds, winds in the belly, when one belches, that's the belly wind coming up, winds in the bowels, winds that course through the limbs. Again, it's the motion of the limbs are considered to, the motion of the limbs is considered to occur because different air currents go through the limbs and cause the bending and stretching of the limbs, the movement of the legs, movement of the arms. Then in-breathing, out-breathing, or whatever else internally belonging to oneself is air, airy, and clung to. This is called the internal air element. Okay, so this is a detailed way of doing the contemplation on the elements. if one is to do the contemplation of the elements briefly, and this is recommended for those with very sharp faculties, so generally it's good not to overrate ourselves, but to begin going in the gradual way, taking the part-by-part approach. But if one does have well-trained faculties and one can go through, use the elements meditation quickly, then one can just go through the entire body, pick up the characteristic of hardness, or look for hardness, softness, and then take all of that in one sweep as the earth element. Then one explores the body in terms of this characteristic of cohesion, holding together, binding together. Takes that in one sweep as the liquid element. Then one experiences the bodily heat, goes through the entire body in one sweep, takes that as the fire element. And then one takes the movement of the body, the constant expansion and contraction, compression of the body, taking that all in together in one sweep as the air element. Okay, there's another way to go gradually through the elements meditation. This is the way that I had learned, and I found it quite effective. But one has to build up to it very gradually. One just can't go into it at once. One has to go through a certain period of doing something like mindfulness of breathing meditation to sensitize the mind. Then one goes through the body part by part, feeling each part, not in the way that Goenka teaches by, you know, taking slices, but one takes whole parts, first the head, taking it all together, then goes through neck, then one will go through upper arm, lower arm, hand, doing it left, right, and turn, taking chest, belly, lap, legs, then going up the back, buttocks, back of the neck, back of the head, till one becomes very, very familiar with the body. One has to do this many, many times, till one becomes extremely sensitive to the body, what's taking place in the body at very subtle levels. Okay, then one seeks out, after one gains that sensitivity, one seeks out the earth element. The way one does this, first one takes something which obviously has the characteristic of hardness. It can be, what's the most evident, is just to take the sensation of the teeth clattering together. One can touch the fingernails or feel the compression. This is not the compression of the air element. Let's put it, the hardness of the legs against the ground or of the hardness of the elbows. And then one focuses upon that particular hard part, where one picks up that sensation of hardness for some time, till one gets a clear perception of hardness. Then once one gets that perception of hardness, then one goes through the body part by part, focusing upon trying to pick up in each of the parts the same process one went through one by one previously, but now one is just going through seeking out the characteristic of hardness, till one goes through the entire body from the top of the head down to the feet, then back up, to back up through the back to the top of the head. Okay, then to get the water element, one could go about this either looking for the sensation of cohesion, which is very subtle and very difficult. If one is very sensitive, one could pick it up. If one can't, then one looks for something with the flowing quality. The most obvious is saliva. And so one could even take some water and drink some water to moisten one's mouth. And then one gets that sense, it's very clear perception of flowingness through the saliva. Then one starts going through the body part by part, picking up to the best of one's ability the sensation of cohesion or the sense of something flowing in the different parts of the body, till one has explored the whole body part by part in terms of the flowing sensation. Then one takes the heat, bodily heat. One looks for any part of the body when one feels special heat. Like sometimes one feels in a particular part of the body a flash of heat. Or really, if one just focuses on any part of the body long enough, one will be able to pick up the bodily heat there. Then one focuses upon that bodily heat. Then one starts going through the body part by part in terms of the bodily heat. Then to get the air element, one takes expansion and contraction. The most obvious place where that is perceived is the lungs expanding and contracting, or the chest expanding and contracting as one is breathing. One picks up that perception, then one starts exploring each part of the body, and one will notice that as one is breathing in and out, each part of the body is also very subtly expanding and contracting along with the in-breath and out-breath. And so one will pick up expansion and contraction occurring through in each part of the body. After one does this one round, one has to keep on doing it round after round after round. But after some time, one will get a familiarity with the presence of the four elements in each part of the body taken as a gross whole, head, arm, and so on. Once one reaches that point, then one could scan through the body in terms of each element, scanning through the entire body just in one sweep from head to feet, looking for the earth element, hardness. Then going through the whole body, again sweeping, looking for the characteristic of cohesion or flowing, the water element. Then scanning the whole body, looking for the fire element, heat or coolness. Then going through the whole body, looking for expansion, contraction. Then once one is able to scan the body in terms of the four elements individually, then one takes the grosser parts of the body again, but instead of focusing upon the elements individually, one focuses upon in each part how the four elements are present simultaneously until one can get the perception of the four elements indivisibly present throughout the whole body. Okay, so this is, then we have the simile coming back to paragraph 12. Okay, here the point of the simile is that when the skilled butcher or his apprentice has killed a cow and the cow is lying there dead, one still has the perception of it as a cow. But when the butcher has cut the cow up into pieces and lays them out in its butcher shop at the crossroads or has them hanging up on hooks from its in the shop, one no longer perceives them as cow or as animal or creature, but instead one just perceives them as different pieces of meat. So in the same way, as long as one has not perceived the body in terms of the elements, one grasps upon the perception of the body as a whole and sees the body as a person, a living being, a self, an entity. But when one has dissected the body in terms of the elements and seen how the body is, no matter how it's placed, walking, standing, sitting, lying down, is made up of these four elements in inseparable combination, then one loses the perception, the idea, the notion, this is a person, a being, a self, and one sees just a compound of material elements. Okay, then according to paragraph 13, one applies this contemplation of the elements in regard to the body internally, externally, both internally and externally. Then one goes through it in the same way as in the other sections. Okay, if there's any questions on the elements, the four elements.
I have a small question, and maybe a large question. The small question was, in each of these paragraphs, in the recitation, say, of water, it's water and concrete.
Yeah.
And fire, fire and concrete.
Yeah.
And air and concrete.
Yeah.
Is this concrete there in Tanha?
This is actually, it's a difficult word with a rather technical sense. I think the sense here is explained by the commentary. Just to make it rather simple, I think we might render it organic. It seems to be, one shouldn't take it too literally, but it seems to have been like, we call it an idiom of usage at that time, basically representing organic matter, as opposed to anupadina, not clung to matter, which would be non-organic matter. And that was the little question?
That was the little question.
Okay, then you said there was a big one?
There's a difference here between insight meditations and what we would call heuristic meditations, not designed to reveal being as it is, but to counter some exaggeration of perception.
Yeah.
Now, is it possible that with some or all of the teachings on five aggregates could be heuristic in that sense?
Maybe heuristic. I know what heuristic means because I was a philosophy major. Can you explain this to some other people who might not know, be familiar with this word?
Well, it's something that for the purposes of educating to make a point, not literal or not meant to be inside.
Yeah, let's say expedient, having expedient, some expedient purpose rather than giving direct insight. I would say the teachings on the five aggregates are definitely intended to lead to insight, because when one has, and also the teaching on the four elements, the contemplation of the four elements is a meditation designed to lead to insight. Because one has, when the Buddha is explaining the contemplation of the four elements, he uses the expression, we have it here, that should be seen as it actually is with proper wisdom, thus. Then one has that yatha bhutang samapanyaya dattabang. That means seeing as it truly is with proper wisdom. That implies seeing things with insight. But something like, one doesn't find that expression used, say, with the meditation on the unattractive nature of the body. That is, I would say, is a meditation that has a heuristic purpose or an expedient purpose. Did somebody hear? I saw. Sharon.
You mean the last stage of the four elements spontaneously and spontaneously happen? What does it look like? I mean, feel like?
The last stage?
Yeah, the four elements spontaneously happen. And the first is like a, you know, because it's internally.
Yeah.
And one feels that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. What do you mean by the last stage?
Like the four elements.
Yeah.
You know, like it happens sometimes without the audience, right? Without any audience. Well, because everybody has a different body, the function, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes probably the fire comes first, and then when you meditate.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then coming for meditation.
Yeah. But I think they generally advise to go in this order. The order that's given here, taking the earth element, water element, fire element, air element.
Usually.
That's, of course, that's the way it's taught. So teachers who teach the... Actually, I shouldn't say that, because at least the person who taught me, I think, began with the, if I remember correctly, began with the air element. Yeah.
Sometimes feel, but usually you are right, the fire comes forth. I mean, fire, you can feel that. And then the wind.
The heat is a little bit more difficult because one has to be quite sensitive to one's body to pick up the bodily heat. The air is the more obvious because one can begin with expansion and contraction of the body while breathing. And that helps to make the body, the mind more sensitive. Then one can pick up the earth element. The most difficult, the most subtle is the water element, the liquid element.
And then when people pass away, the things pass away.
Yeah.
And it's just like that, earth, water, fire, air, and then odor. Like it happens, the thing goes.
I don't know if there's any order to their dissolution. If I remember, I had read many years ago that book by Sogyal Rinpoche called The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying, which is based on the Tibetan Book of the Dead. And that describes some order in which the elements cease to function within the body. But that's according to a Tibetan scheme. But in the Pali sources, whether suttas or commentaries, no order is mentioned to the cessation of the functioning of the elements. It's just that when the life faculty is cut off, when vitality leaves the body, then one just has the four elements remain, but they're no longer living elements. It's just the body becomes just four inorganic elements, just like external matter. Okay, Suki has a question. Or a comment, yeah.
Upon the matter of the linguistic thing.
Okay.
in my opinion, everything here is not realistic at all. Even because of one, there are two kinds of contemplation. I mean, English uses contemplation for both Kaya Nupasana and also contemplation of the body part. But yeah. Actually, you talk about contemplation of body part, maybe could be used for heuristic purposes.
Yeah.
Like that. But that is not even, I don't think it's a heuristic purpose, because it's two different methods of meditation. First, the fire nupasana is really actually seeing as it is.
Yeah.
The other one is the is it anupasati? You don't see it, but you kind of contemplate it, whatever is in your body.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that it's just for the purpose of teaching. It actually is you remembering, because you see somewhere you saw the body part, but you can kind of picture it within your mind. So it's not exactly like it's totally different from seeing, somehow, when you said that there's a possibility of heuristic purpose, I just don't agree with that.
Mm.
Because in meditation,
yeah.
Everything is really, you experience. Either you really see it,
yeah.
Or you visualize.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that bothers me.
You really see it or you visualize. Yeah, I should say, I should put it this way, that the asubha bhavana, the normal meditation on the unattractive nature of the body, does have a heuristic purpose, because its purpose is to help one to overcome, to suppress, to eliminate kama vitaka, thoughts of sensual, kama raga, sensual lust, sensual desire. Now, what I would say is that in the context of the Satipatthana Sutta, the contemplation on the unattractive nature of the body does not simply have that purpose of generating the perception of unattractiveness in order to overcome sensual desire, but it's integrated into the system which is intended to generate insight. But initially, one develops the perception of the unattractive nature of the body by going through the bodily parts, and that will incidentally be helping to remove sensual desire. But the meditation on unattractiveness in the Satipatthana Sutta is intended to lead into the contemplations of paragraph 11, being able to apply this perception first internally, externally, then both, then to move into the contemplation of the arising and vanishing of factors in the body. And then that contemplation of arising and vanishing, that is insight. And so here the contemplation of unattractive, or the perception of unattractiveness, or meditation on attractiveness, is, it doesn't stand alone, but it's part of a more comprehensive structure which is designed to lead to the perception of impermanence, to insight. Is that?
Yes, but you know, all of these Satipatthana meditation,
yeah,
leads people to realize the perception of impermanence.
Yeah. That is so.
Right.
That is so.
So,
okay. Okay, you have some other?
One other is not a...
Go ahead.
Regarding that, the summary of the battle of the brain.
Yeah.
I heard one very good teaching, and I thought I'd like to share. Maybe it helps me. When you look at the back wall of a brain,
yeah.
It is like a person with a good eye see all the different brains.
Yeah.
And the most important part is this. When you see each brain, you don't say, oh, this brain is really good. Oh, this brain is ugly. You don't say that.
Yeah.
You just look.
Yeah.
Then each, oh, this is just right. This is the thing.
Yeah.
Just like that.
Yeah.
You go through your part of your body.
Yeah.
You don't exactly hate. Or you don't really say, oh, this mind is so beautiful. You don't say that.
Yeah.
It's just as a detachment. Oh, this is just a part and part of all, you know, all those things,
I don't think there's an exact parallel there. Because when you're looking just at the grains, you look at them with complete detachment. But if this is, I mean, the text does use this full of nanapakara asuchino. It uses the expression asuchino, impure things, and it's designed to generate this perception of asubha, of unattractiveness. And according to the instructions that come in, well, the commentaries, one is supposed to focus on that particular aspect, the unattractive nature of these parts, in this meditation. And this is where it differs from the examination of the same parts of the body in the elements meditation. In the elements meditation, one is not considering the parts as either beautiful or unattractive or repulsive. One is considering them just, there one is completely in the neutral gear, considering them just as elements. Earth element, water element, fire element, air element, neither attractive nor unattractive, but just elements. Yeah, yeah. Okay, I think we have to stop. Okay, just one quick question.
You talk about how the five hindrances relate to jhana meditation.
Yeah.
How do the hindrances, you know, we have to overcome them before we can attain jhana? How do the hindrances relate to this meditation?
We come to that in the Dhamma, contemplation of Dhammas. Okay. So we'll discuss it there. Okay, shall we? Ready to close? Okay, we do sharing of the merits. Share the merits with the devas and other beings. Akasata chabumata devanaga mahitika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakantu sasanam. Akasata chabumata devanaga mahitika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakantu desanam. Akasata chabumata deva naga mahitika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakantu mang parang. Etavata chaham mehi sampadang punya sampadang. Sabe deva anumodantu sabha sampati siddhya. Etavata chaham mehi sampadang punya sampadang. Sabe bhuta anumodantu sabha sampati siddhya. Etavata cha amhehi sampadang punya.